special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
What's going on? You are here live on the Golan Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio, and this is the first Boxing Source Radio show of the year 2018. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Truth on Sports. You can catch boxing articles and more on thechtonsports.com. Once again, thechtonsports.com. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. You'll be able to press the one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. You know, just getting back into the thick of things here in reference to, you know, getting back on Blog Talk, been out for a few weeks, reference doing podcasts and stuff like that. But, you know, also recently been under the weather. So just going to be trying to get through this 1 hour podcast and whatnot. Go through a few things that are, you know, happening over the next few weeks and over the next few months in the sport of boxing. So we'll be, you know, probably getting through all of that and, you know, have a little take on, you know, what's going on in the sport of boxing. So we'll be able to get into that here in a few, just, you know, trying to catch up on a few things. But before that, just have a, you know, opening break here for me to, you know, get situated, and then we'll be right back at it. Once again, this is the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Golan Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all, this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida. Great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
All right, we're back here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show. You're on the Golan Media Channel, Blog Talk Radio. Number to dial is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. All right, like I said here, we're you're here on Sunday, January 14th, 2018, and, you know, we got a you know, few things to look forward to in the sport of boxing. We got through, you know, a pretty eventful year in 2017. I mean, we had a lot of, you know, big events happening, you know, over the course of the year. You had the, you know, the Canelo-Golovkin fight. You had Mayweather-McGregor among the big events there. You know, we had the start of the World Boxing Super Series. You had the heavyweight unification fight that happened between Anthony Joshua and Vladimir Klitschko. You also had the, you know, the junior welterweight unification fight between Terence Crawford and Julius Ndongo that were part of the many big and exciting fights that happened in the year 2017 that kind of, you know, made a lot of fans think that 2017 was one of the best years in the sport of boxing since 2013. And so, you know, we're hoping to carry that momentum over to the year 2018. And, you know, looking at the early schedule for this year, it looks like they're, you know, trying to keep up with that momentum within multiple divisions. You'll have multiple key fights in multiple divisions there. So it's going to be, you know, interesting to, you know, see how things shape up for the sport of boxing in the year 2018. You know, starting off with, you know, what has kind of been, you know, a basic annual opening, so to speak, over at the Barclays Center. They've had, you know, a couple of, you know, big events there in the month of January. Last year you had the, you know, the super middleweight cation fight between Battle Jack and James DeGale. 2 years ago you had Deontay Wilder defend his title against Archer Spilka. And this year you're going to have the IBF welterweight championship on the line, as the main event will be Errol Spence Jr. defending the IBF welterweight championship against Lamont Peterson. And that's going to be a key, you know, key fight for both of those guys. I mean, Errol Spence Jr., this will be, you know, his first defense of that IBF welterweight championship, as he was, you know, able to get that title from Kell Brook back in May of 2017 over in Sheffield, and had set out for the rest of the year, so to speak, of 2017, not able to, you know, get a fight locked in to defend the IBF title. And so I guess it, you know, took until January to get this matchup with Lamont Peterson. And with Peterson, you know, he came in there at welterweight. Of course, we know that Peterson was a super lightweight champion at one point, and eventually moved up to welterweight in 2017 after, you know, having almost a 2-year layoff. Won the WBA regular welterweight title in February of 2017 over David Avanjan. And, you know, just basically gave up that WBA regular belt in order to challenge Errol Spence Jr. So, I mean, it's, you know, something where, you know, Errol Spence kind of like talked about a lot of people out there that wouldn't step up to fight him. And here we have, you know, Lamont Peterson right here being able to, you know, give up a welterweight championship belt in order to challenge Errol Spence Jr. here. So this is going to be a, you know, very key fight in the welterweight division. Like I said, you have Errol Spence, undefeated IBF welterweight champion, in there at 22-0, going up against Lamont Peterson, is there at 35-3. You know, he had that close majority decision loss to Danny Garcia back in 2015, where a lot of people thought that he ended up, basically winning that fight. But the judges ended up giving Danny Garcia that decision. But he was, able to win the next couple of fights after that, even though he had like a near two-year layoff in between this fight between Felix Diaz and David Avanian. So he's, having this next one here against Errol Spence. It's going to be a very interesting card here. And like I said, that's going to be the headlining event right there. And also part of this card, you're going to have a heavyweight bout. Adam Kownacki going up against Yago Galazde. So you're going to have a few of the Polish contingent out there supporting Adam Kownacki. You have Kownacki there, 16-0. He's had a few fights over at the Barclays Center. A lot of them. I would say about like five or six over at the Barclays Center here before going up before this particular fight. And his last fight actually was in Uniondale, New York, where he was able to get a TKO victory over Artur Spoko, who, as I mentioned before, was part of the Barclays Center card in January of 2016. So that's going to be, part of the card. You also have the light heavyweight matchup, Marcus Brown going up against Francis Ntetsu, which is, I don't know what that particular match is all about. I thought that, Marcus Brown was basically, on his way up in the light heavyweight division. So kind of interesting to see why he would take this match. Real quick, I got 202 on the line. Tell us your name, where you calling from.
Happy New Year, James, man. It's World Rank checking in. Just enjoying the Martin Luther King holiday weekend and just ready for some boxing. We haven't had any real meaningful fights in a couple of weeks, so Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, Happy New Year there, brother. Just getting back into the thick of things here in the boxing scene and, just trying to catch up and all of that. Been off for a couple of weeks and hit a couple of events here and there. So focusing on what's going to happen here on January 20th with the headlining bout between Errol Spence Jr. and Lamont Peterson. Anything real quick about, that title fight coming up?
Yeah, so again, it's basically the first main fight of the year. A lot of people are anticipating, that fight, to culminate the start of the 2018 boxing year. In terms of expectations for the fight, a lot of people think it's going to be, a tough fight. Peterson, who just won a welterweight title, I guess he gave it up to get this fight. I don't really understand. If you have a belt, why would you give it up to fight for another belt? Why couldn't it just be a unification? I guess it would be more to it, but to me, I just think this is a fight where this is a fight to make Spence look good. A lot of people think Peterson's going to give him some trouble. I don't necessarily think so. You know, I hope it's a good fight. Peterson always comes to fight. He's always in most of his fights. But somehow I just got the feeling that this is like a look good fight for Spence. He's going to do probably something people don't expect. If he doesn't, I would be disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, kind of a weird situation there with Lamont Peterson, you know, giving up the WBA regular belt, you know, to go after the IBF belt. But I guess, you know, since you already had like a quote-unquote super champion with Keith Thurman, I'm not sure how it would work out if, you know, Lamont Peterson was the WBA regular champ and he would be able to win the IBF welterweight champion, how the WBA would be able to handle it. But, you know, even with that, I think that, you know, Peterson, you know, it's kind of like, I would say this is almost like a fight between two guys that may have similar approaches in the ring. It's just that, you know, Errol Spence is the one with the youth, I would say, in this particular matchup. And I think that may be the key factor in this matchup with Lamont Peterson is his youth and his, you know, kind of like his speed on the inside that would kind of like, you know, be the key for him to get the upper hand over Lamont Peterson. But, you know, even with that, I think it's going to be a, you know, very good inside fight between those two, and something that I think a lot of the fans there at the Barclays Center will look forward to. You know, in reference to like the undercard, I was, you know, talking about, you know, Adam Konacki being included in this particular matchup or this particular fight card, that is. Yeah, you also had like, you know, Marcus Brown in a light heavyweight matchup against Francie and Tetu. And the co-feature will be, you know, the IBF lightweight championship bout between Robert Easter Jr. and Javier Fortuna. I'm kind of like mystified about the matchup that Marcus Brown had, but I think that was, you know, kind of because I think he turned down one fight, if I'm not mistaken. I just forgot who it was in particular that they tried to match him up with. World Rank, do you have any info on that?
Nah, not on the Marcus Brown situation. I think what it is, from the understanding of whatever fight he didn't take, it wasn't a meaningful, let me not say meaningful, the reward for taking that fight wasn't worth it. He's in a position right now that he's high ranked, I believe, in the WBC, and I'm pretty sure, you know, his handlers probably told him, you know, just take a stay busy fight. Your title shot is coming. So I think they were in a position not to take any chances. So they chose to go, you know, the stay busy route.
Yeah, I guess so with that. It's just that the, you know, the WBC light heavyweight situation, you know, it's kind of weird in itself because, you know, they, you know, try to raise something there with the WBC light heavyweight champion and the mandatory contender. You know, where the mandatory ended up taking another, you know, step aside, and then they tried to offer him another fight to take, but Eleanor Alvarez ended up passing on taking that fight and just saying that, hey, I mean, I got my spot, I earned my spot, I shouldn't have to fight anybody else, you know, for that spot. So that pretty much is, you know, what's going on there in the light heavyweight situation in reference to the WBC. Now, in reference to, you know, the IBF lightweight championship fight, you have Robert Easter Jr. going up against Javier Fortuna. And when I heard about this matchup at first, it was kind of like a follow-up to what happened there in reference to Mikey Garcia, because there was, like, some talk that Mikey Garcia would possibly face Robert Easter Jr., for that lightweight belt. But Garcia ended up, you know, passing on that and going for, you know, a belt in a, you know, in another, you know, division, going up to super lightweight to face Sergey Lipinets, which will, you know, be on February 10th, 2018. But reference to this thing here with Robert Easter Jr., what do you think about his matchup with Javier Fortuna?
I mean, I'm highly disappointed. If I look, you know, if I look at the lightweight rankings, and there's a lot of decent fights that could be happening. You get Javier Fortuna, a guy who hasn't done much at lightweight, just recently moved up to that weight and getting that type of opportunity. I mean, I don't necessarily like the fight, but it's a stay busy fight for Easter. It is a dangerous fight for him. He's expected to win, but it's one of those things, if he don't look good, it's not going to look good, you know, on him. People are going to be down on him. He has to look good in this fight, because I think if he doesn't against a, you know, a opponent that he's expected to beat, you know, there's a lot of hype. I think his situation and Spence is kind of similar. Of course, Spence is the bigger name. He's the more high-profile guy, more relevant fighter. But, you know, if he doesn't look good against Peterson, I think both of those guys are against inferior opposition. And if they don't look good, I think a lot of people are gonna not necessarily change their opinion about him, but, you know, they're not going to be as high as they are on him right now.
Yeah, and I think that's the expectation that's going to be coming in reference to this Robert Easter Jr. fight, because, you know, he has the height and the length here to, you know, give Javier Fortuna a lot of problems. So he should be able to, you know, give Fortuna a lot of issues here. And like you were saying, with Fortuna, like, kind of like moving up from, you know, being in the super featherweight division in 2016 and things like that, you know, going up to lightweight, Easter should be expected to, you know, get a big win here. And if he's, you know, not going to be able to do that, then that'll raise a lot of questions as to, you know, what could do continuing to defend that IBF lightweight championship. And the thing with, you know, Mikey Garcia going up against Sergey Lipinets for that super lightweight championship, it's kind of like he's going up there just to win a belt. And a lot of talk is like, well, he's going up to win that belt, but is he going to stay at 140 or is he going to go back down to 135? Even though there's like a lot of, you know, a lot of talent there in the 140-pound division, and a lot of matchups that could be made in the 140-pound division, it's almost like they're, you know, looking to see him fight some guys at 135 there. So I think that's, you know, that's kind of like what the expectation is going to be there for Mikey Garcia. I think we had like a couple of other fights that are scheduled there for January 20th. They say that they're going to have Sergey Derevchenko as part of this fight card. And I thought there would have been one other one that was like for a female title, but I think they kind of like scrapped it. I think Amanda Serrano was going to be part of this fight card, but I think they just took her out of that fight card. So I'm seeing about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, about like 10 or 11 fights on the card, but we'll see what ends up happening there. You also had like at super lightweight, Anthony Peterson going up against Luis Eduardo Flores. I think that's going to be, you know, something that like a kind of like a filler, so to speak, before, you know, these four or five fights come up here on the Showtime fight card. But that's, you know, looking like what's shaping up to happen there on January 20th to kind of like start things off in the year 2018 in the sport of boxing. But, you know, next week, the next week they have a couple of things going on HBO with that WBA regular title that Lamont Peterson gave up. It will be on the line in Inglewood, California, where Lucas Matisse will have a chance to get it going up against Tiwa Kirim. And as part of the undercard, you have Jorge Linares going up against Mercedo Gesta. Yeah, I've kind of like heard about this particular fight card. It looks like they ain't moving any tickets for this particular event here. I've heard like only a few, you know, only a few tickets have been sold in reference to this particular fight card. Have you seen any updates on this one here, World Rank?
Not in terms of the tickets. I mean, when you got guys, you know, this is a Golden Boy is really a West Coast promotion, so they try to tend to the Mexican base per se. On this card, you know, they don't necessarily, you know, they have a, I believe, a Filipino going up against a. Linares is from Venezuela, I think. Yeah, I think he's from. So you got a South American fighter going up against a Filipino fighter, and then you have a Argentina fighter against a Thai fighter. So, you know, I don't know how much they're, you know, in terms of the sales they're going to actually do. But a question I do have for you, do you think, and this is a prime question, do you think Lucas Matisse and or Lamont Peterson are still in their prime?
I don't know about Matisse. I think that, you know, what happened with him, you know, over the past couple of fights kind of like took a lot out of him. So that, you know, as far as like, you know, what he's going to be able to do, here in the welterweight division, I'm not certain that, he's going to, you know, be able to do, that much. I mean, he did have, you know, his, win over Emmanuel Taylor after like nearly a 2-year layoff, but the way that he got, beaten by Victor Postol, he was just, you know, he was just outboxed, out hustled. Someone that had length and, you know, was, you know, a lot better than he was. So, you know, even if there was a, you know, way that he was able to get this, you know, win over Tiwa Kirim, in January 27th, if he, you know, challenged the likes of a, you know, a Keith Thurman or Sean Porter or, you know, Danny Garcia again, he may, you know, end up getting beaten again. So I think, you know, his best days are behind him. In reference to Lamont Peterson, I mean, I would probably say that might be the same thing with him. I think he had his best run at super lightweight. He's going to be in a very tough fight here against Errol Spence. And I think like a lot of wear and tear, you know, was taken out of him in the super lightweight division. Even though, you know, he, you know, it isn't like he, you know, took a lot of punishment over the course of his career. It just seems like his peak has already been reached and that he can't really do much else in the welterweight division. So, you know, him getting a regular welterweight championship over David Avanjan may be the, you know, peak of where he's going to be able to reach here in the welterweight division.
And to back up your point, his style is a short-term career suited style, that come forward mm-hmm. style. And one thing that his style has that he needs that he never had was power. So even coming up the ranks and during his title reigns, when he was at his best, he was still getting hit, and he was getting hit for 10 rounds and 12 rounds. He didn't – very rarely did he have short nights on the offensive end or even the defensive end. He very rarely got guys out of here and, you know, preserved his body to the point where he could be still considered in his prime. Like, every fight was long distance, hard, tough fights. The only fight that, you know, that wasn't hard was still a knockout loss. So, you know, even through his prospect stage, he has a lot of unanimous decisions, not a lot of TKOs coming up. So, you know, he has, and when you include the style, when you include that he doesn't have a lot of power, he's in there for the duration of these fights, taking a lot of hits.
Yeah, I mean, half of Peterson's fights have, like, ended in KO victories, you know, but other than that, they've, you know, kind of, like, went the distance, whether, you know, he's won or he's lost. So, and somebody that, you know, doesn't really carry, you know, a lot of power going up to the welterweight division, may not be a good thing there going against guys of that caliber. Just to add in another caller here, 813, what's going on with you?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Terrell calling in from Tampa. Just excited to get into yet a new year of boxing. And even I think you guys are talking about the Peterson-Spence matchup coming up next week. I think the best to fight Peterson's lack of power, his best attribute for this fight is his durability. I think he got a KO loss to someone, or has only been down a small handful of times, I believe. And you guys can definitely correct me, but he's definitely a durable guy, you know. So it's like the closer we get to this fight, the more I'm liking Peterson's chances in this fight. For one, he's fighting at 147, which means that he does have to drop as much weight and kill himself, like he said before. Because when he was at 147, he always had to kill himself. Say usually walks around 160, 170, and of course now having to go down to 140. That's good for him, and now it's hard on the body. Because when you drain yourself down like that, typically you're drained within when it comes to fight time. And so I like his chance of being stronger. Like I said, doesn't necessarily carry a lot of power at 147, but still, it's just close to get this fight. I'm going to like his chances. I'm trying to think of some recent examples of. Where you got pretty much like a veteran has came in and pulled a shocker over like a young hot prospect. I mean, I'll continue to think about that. I almost want to say for Donna Broner, that's not really the same type of example I'm looking for, but trying to tell us where we got a veteran come in and say pull an upset over a young champion or something like that. But and Peterson's not beyond his years. He's not a shot potter, and not at all. So he definitely has 3 years left in him, especially considering the fact that he had that layoff for the last couple of years. So what do you guys think?
Well, the quickest thing that I thought of in reference to like a veteran being over a young fighter is when Bernard Hopkins was able to get the decision win over Kelly Pavlik. That basically, you know, derailed Kelly Pavlik's run, you know, that he had in the middleweight division. But, you know, other than that, I can't really, you know, think of anything offhand. But, I mean, it'll be something to see if Lamont Peterson will be able to score this win. But it'll, you know, kind of like shape what happens in the welterweight division carrying over to the year 2018, because, I mean, you have, like, a few other fights in the welterweight division that are coming up that include, you know, key welterweights, you know, including Danny Garcia in a fight that, you know, a lot of people may feel that, you know, is not necessary at this point of Danny Garcia's career. But, I mean, you know, Garcia's basically been on a proverbial bench for about a year, so I think this is, you know, something that, you know, gets him in the thick of things, and then, you know, you have Keith Thurman that still hasn't, you know, made it official as to what his return fight is going to be either. So, I mean, I would like to see how this kind of like fares out on Saturday night. But As far as, like, you know, what happens after that for Lamont Peterson, win or lose, I mean, I'm not sure because it was, you know, very difficult for Peterson to, you know, get a fight, you know, after his thing with Felix Diaz. So, I mean, if he loses this and loses emphatically, then who knows when he's going to be able to get back into the scene.
I'm not sure that he gets another opportunity on this stage unless he wins. I don't see any real reason. I don't think he's a guy that necessarily PBC wants to push, if you know what I'm saying. I don't think this is a guy that they say, hey, you know, if he beats Spence, this is a guy that we're going to push to the main front. I think everybody expects him to lose if he wins. And one thing he does have going for himself, he's always stepped up to the task beyond the Khan fight. He did better than what a lot of people thought. If you thought he win or lost, he still, you know, fought a very decent fight. Danny Garcia, same thing. You know, he's there to the end. He didn't really show up in a Matisse fight, but that, I think that's more of Matisse was just so bullish on him. Peterson just didn't have the power to keep him off of him. Other than that, he's all, like you guys said, he's always been durable, but I just don't think he's a guy that nobody wants to push, you know. And it's sad because I look at his brother's career. His brother's career is much more maligned. Like, this guy has like 40 fights and hasn't been in a decent fight in at least 5 or 6 years, like a relevant fight. In 5 or 6 years, just the way he's been put to the side is just shameful, because I think if you give him the opportunity, you know, to fight some of these top guys, and I don't know if he's at 140 or still at 135, but I think he's, you know, you put Anthony Peterson against, you know, Robert Easter, that's a decent fight. It's just a shame that he's been put to the side like this. So it only speaks to, you know, what they'll do to Lamont if he loses this fight.
Yeah, that's something there that you kind of brought up in reference to, you know, Anthony Peterson. You know, he has, you know, 38 professional fights, right? And not one of them is for a world title. He was, you know, there at, you know, lightweight, and he has, you know, this particular – he's on this particular fight card at super lightweight against Luis Eduardo Flores, and – you know, he still, you know, hasn't been able to, you know, get a, you know, world title shot. And actually, his last fight was over at the DC Armory as part of that fight card with, I think it was that Adrian Broner card there where Broner was, facing Ashley Theophane. And he hadn't fought since then, so it's like both of these Peterson brothers had like nearly a 2-year layoff. So I'm like, what in the world is going on out here with you know, these two guys? You know, the thing with Anthony Peterson, his lone loss was a DQ loss to Brandon Rios. So it's like, you know, both of these guys just didn't have the, you know, marketing ability to, you know, stand out, to have these major big time title fights or marquee fights to, you know, put them in the spotlight. And so that's kind of like interesting that, you know, you bring up, you know, Anthony Peterson as well, because he's, you know, been actually a lot more maligned than his brother Lamont has been.
But, you know, what's surprising is, you know, in the old days, you know, a guy like this who have 39, 38 fights, you might not have heard of. You know, 38-1, 39-1, he might get a title shot, and you may have never heard of. In this day and age, to have, and especially in the U.S., to have that type of record, to have over almost 40 fights and only have one loss, and to be an American fighter and not be getting, you know, reasonable, decent fights for your level, that's crazy. The Rios fight had to be at least like 7 years ago.
And hey guys, think about this for a minute. Kind of mirroring two sets of brothers together, the Peterson brothers and the Durrell brothers. Like with Lamont Peterson, we know all about him. Recognize him at 140, 147, former belt holder. We know that, and we know his body of work. And like when you guys speak for his young brother, like you guys are saying, where has his guy been? Why has he not made more for himself at this point in the square with that type of record? And you look at the Terrell brothers. We know about the older brother. We know about him from the Super Six tournament. All those things, the fights with I forgot the German guy that fouled him when he went down or something like that, whatever. But like, what's up with his younger brother? Because like with both brothers, when they both came in, there's a good amount of hype behind them that they're going to do some good things in boxing. And as you look at it now, we only know one brother in each one. And I'm not sure what happened to the younger Terrell brother, but it's like he still fights, but where's he at? Why hasn't we seen him more? He asked that question of both sets of brothers, you know?
Yeah, the real situation is a little different because, the funny part is both of the younger brothers' names are Anthony. But Anthony did become a world champion. He did.
Yeah.
I forgot who. He became a world champion, and I think he was out because he had cancer or something to that effect, where he had to be out for a couple of years. But once he came back fairly recently. You know, he became a world champion, and right now he's probably the better Darrell.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, but I definitely understand what you're saying. Andre started out with the high profile, you know, the Super Six and things.
Yeah, the better background and all of that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Anthony Darrell has had more opportunities than Anthony Peterson, though. You know, Anthony Darrell was a world champion for a short time until he lost the. I think he lost to Badu Jack.
Jack.
Yeah. So, you know, Anthony Darrell is still, you know, he's more of a known commodity than Anthony Peterson, though. He's accomplished a little more in the sport, but I understand your point is well taken about the little brothers.
Yeah, and that's, interesting you bring up, you know, the Darrell brothers, and you know, of course you had the, you know, whole thing coming up with, you know, Andre Darrell, but, you know, Anthony, you know, was able to win that, you know, WBC version of the Super Middleweight Championship. And he also, you know, has a win over Caleb Truax, who, you know, was, you know, able to get a Super Middleweight title over over James DeGale before the end of this year. So he could be, you know, right back in the mix in the Super Middleweight division here in 2018, of course, because of his recent technical decision win over Dennis Duglin over in Flint, Michigan in November. But, you know, reference here to the, Peterson brothers, you know, it's something there where, you know, you have, you know, Lamont, you know, out there being able to, you know, get these world title shots that he's been able to, you know, been able to get. But, his brother Anthony Peterson hadn't been able to get that particular shot. You know, it seems like, you know, up until the point where he fought Brandon Rios, he was basically, you know, on his way up. But then after that disqualification loss, it's almost like he's been, you know, basically on the back burner. I mean, he's, you know, kind of like faced a couple of unknowns here and there. You know, in 2015, he fought somebody with a record of 8 wins, 11 losses, and 5 draws. So that kind of like, you know, shows where he was, you know, placed as far as like the proverbial boxing bench, as far as like getting opportunities out there. So, I mean, I don't know like where you know Anthony Peterson is going to be. In reference to, you know, the direction of his professional career, particularly what he's going to be able to do against Luis Eduardo Flores here in the, you know, in the super lightweight division. I mean, you have guys there at 100, you know, and 40 pounds. Like I was saying before, it's a very deep division there at 140 pounds. So we'd like to see, you know, if he's going to be able to do something there, but I'm not sure if, you know, they have any openings for, Anthony Peterson, just like they have any openings for Lamont Peterson. Just a real quick, getting in another caller here, area code 646, what's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on, man? How's everything? Good show so far.
Hey there, 646, what's good with you, my man?
I'm thinking about the whole sense card against Peterson. You know, I heard you guys talking about, well, it's Anthony Peterson, you know. I don't think he has anything. He's just there to collect a check just because the brother's on the card. I'm more interested in Robert Issa against Javier Fortuna.
Fortuna?
Because I think Issa is a potential opponent for either Jorge Linares or even maybe if Lomachenko decides to move up to 135, I can see him trying to pick on, I guess, the least seasoned guy there. So that's just something that I'm looking at and I'm looking forward to in this upcoming event.
Now, earlier I was bringing up that thing there with Robert Issa Jr. and Javier Fortuna, and that was, you know, kind of like a when the fight was announced, it was basically a follow-up to the thing with Mikey Garcia fighting on February 10th, where he goes up against Sergey Lipinets, because, you know, there was, like, rumors going around that Mikey Garcia could possibly fight Robert Easton Jr., but, you know, since that kind of, like, you know, fell through, Garcia ended up, you know, going up to fight Lipinets to see if he could get another belt in another weight division. And then following that is when we, you know, got this announcement that Robert Easton Jr. would fight against Javier Fortuna. I would say there, if Easter goes ahead and gets his win, you think he'll have a potential fight against Jorge Linares there in the lightweight division?
Yeah, I think he's more looking at Linares than Garcia, because, you know, usually Heyman doesn't match two of his best fighters together unless he absolutely has to, like the Thurman-Garcia situation. Usually, yeah. Heyman usually likes to keep his two top guys apart unless it's mandated by a sanctioning body. So I'm thinking he's gonna send Easter, or maybe even send Mikey Garcia after Linares. But it really depends on how Garcia performs at 140. You know, maybe he starts feeling himself at 140. Maybe he wants to stay there. Maybe he wants to clean out the 140 division. You know, Mikey has previously looked at going to welterweight. So you never know what Mikey Garcia is going to do. He's crazy enough to fight at any weight. So you never know what he's going to do. But with Easter, I see Easter trying to reign supreme at 135. He seems like he's interested in finding big fights. I guess it's just a matter of him forcing Heyman's hand to really do something with him, because I've heard rumors that he's actually grown frustrated with the inactivity that a lot of Heyman fighters have been experiencing. Mm-hmm. And as you've seen with now Amir Khan signing with Matchroom, a lot of these Heyman fighters are signing with promoters and they're not consulting Al Heyman on it, you know. He is basically an advisor, so a lot of them are free to leave if they're not satisfied with what he's doing. And I think a lot of fighters are going to look at the Aleta Alvarez situation and how he was basically screwed out of it. Well, he screwed himself, but how he's not getting his title shot now. And, you know, this might be the year that you see a mass exodus of Al Heyman fighters.
Well, I think that, yeah, that may be the case because, you know, over the past, you know, couple of years or so, we've seen a lot of these notable fighters that are, you know, under the advisement of Al Heyman basically are, you know, sitting on the bench as far as, like, these fights are concerned, and that, you know, they haven't been, you know, given the opportunity to be featured in a fight card or whatnot. I mean, we've, You know, you mentioned the Mikey Garcia there. You also had rumors about, you know, Errol Spence maybe leaving that Al Heyman type of banner there to, you know, look elsewhere as far as, like, being promoted by somebody else. So you might, you know, see that happening with a couple of notable fighters here and there over the course of 2018 to where you see that they're not, you know, necessarily dealing with either, you know, either dealing with Al Heyman or dealing with promoters that are kind of like affiliated with Al Heyman. Like, you know, for example, you have you guys like, I mean, you were talking about Oliver Alvarez in his, you know, situation with the WBC and Adonis Stevenson. If I'm not mistaken, both Stevenson and Alvarez are promoted under Yvonne Michel and Jim Promotions over in Canada. And so you have Alvarez there basically, you know, sitting on the bench waiting for his title shot that, you know, he had about three fights for that mandatory position, and he was able to win all three. And now they're talking about him possibly, you know, facing somebody else for that spot. And he's like, nah, man, I had already fought three times for this spot, and I won all three. Time for me to get my shot. And, you know, they were saying, like, you know, Yvonne Michel was trying to get that fight done before the end of 2017, but couldn't make it happen. And now Stevenson is saying, hey, I want the big fights now. I'm the champ. I want the big fights. So he wants to, you know, go against Badu Jack for the WBC light heavyweight title. So, you know, with that being, you know, the focus of Adonis Stevenson and Yvonne Michel, that basically puts Eleanor Alvarez on the bench yet again and saying, hey, I'll take the step-aside money one more time. And, you know, he basically is just going to be, you know, sitting in the back burner once again. Without, you know, taking a challenging fight there. But you may see, you know, other notable guys within that Al Heyman advisement banner that, you know, won't be able to, you know, have many fights in 2018. That's going to be like, hey, since I ain't getting the spotlight, you know, what else is there for me to do? And like you said there with Amir Khan signing with Matchroom, I mean, you have Eddie Hearn already having, you know, one particular fight card over in New York on November 11th with, you know, Jarrell Big Baby Miller. So you might have more and more fighters going over to him. You know, Jarrell Miller and Daniel Jacobs is there with Eddie Hearn. So you might have even more people rolling with Eddie Hearn over here in the U.S.
Is it true that I heard that I don't know if you guys heard this too. Two parts. That first thing that the people that Heyman worked with, they had like some type of statement out on Twitter, and they were showing that Heyman was given a certain amount of money, and most of that money is gone. So therefore, that's why some of his fighters have left and things of that nature. And then the second part was. That I also heard that Heyman had told Jacobs to go to Hearn for that deal. Did you guys hear either one of those things?
I didn't hear the first part. The only thing I heard was way back when about the group of investors were not happy with Heyman and the PBC, and they were suing them for losing a lot of the money, and they haven't reaped any rewards from it. But nobody knows who these financial backers are. So to me, anyone claiming on Twitter that they're the financial backers are probably lying. No one knows who the mystery group was that's been funding the PBC. We just know that Al Heyman was the front man for it and was given a lot of money to basically try to rule over boxing. No one knows who these guys are. Now, when it comes to the Jacobs situation, from what I heard, Jacobs, out of respect to Al Heyman, didn't make it public that he was leaving Al Heyman, but he decided to leave Al Heyman. He didn't get Al Heyman's blessing, just decided to sign with Matchroom because he wanted to get bigger fights and he felt like his career wasn't where it should be. So he felt like in order for him to get big fights and to get exposure on HBO and possibly worldwide renown in the UK, that he needed to leave Heyman. And because he has a lot of respect for what Heyman did for him when he went through his whole cancer ordeal, he didn't make it public because he didn't want to embarrass Heyman. But Heyman really had nothing to do with his deal with Matchroom.
Yeah, I kind of thought the whole thing with the investors kind of came from the previous year when they were talking about the overall budget for Premier Boxing Champions going into 2017. I didn't, you know, think about it, you know, carrying over to 2018. And, you know, I'm not necessarily certain as to what they're going to do as far as, like, an overall budget for boxing in the broadcast stations there. Really, for me, I kind of, like, hear more about it through Showtime and what Steven Espinosa has planned or in store for what the Showtime boxing schedule is. But as far as, like, the broadcast schedule, I really haven't, you know, heard that much as far as, like, what's going to happen in reference to that, and that the investors are, you know, basically getting the returns that they are looking for in reference to what's happening with Premier Boxing Champions. And, you know, the thing with Daniel Jacobs, I kind of, like, you know, agree with what 646 was saying, is that, you know, Daniel Jacobs is kind of, like, trying to look for more opportunities being there at the middleweight division that he probably couldn't get under the advisement of Al Heyman and, you know, the opportunities that were probably going to be presented to him in the middleweight division under Al Heyman and Lou DiBella and Tom Brown and, you know, possibly other promoters under that banner. So I think what Jacobs is trying to do is move closer to, you know, either getting a rematch with Gennady Golovkin or possibly having that opportunity to fight Billy Joe Saunders there for Saunders' WBO middleweight title. But for Daniel Jacobs, I just don't see that, you know, he's going to be able to get that opportunity as soon as he wants because, you know, you have Billy Joe Saunders after his win over David Lemieux having a beeline towards Gennady Golovkin, and you have Gennady Golovkin and Canelo Alvarez basically almost like locked down for a rematch on May 5th. And if that rematch is kind of like locked in, then I don't think that Billy Joe Saunders is going to, you know, risk an opportunity to, you know, lose a potential, you know, big money fight between the winner of those two guys by going against Daniel Jacobs. So I just don't, you know, see where Daniel Jacobs is going to go in the middleweight division in reference to, you know, signing with Eddie Hearn, even though Eddie Hearn probably could make some things happen. But as far as, like, a potential matchup with him, Jacobs, and Joe Saunders, I'm not really seeing that as the immediate plans there in the middleweight division. You know, just have, like, under a minute left here in the live section of the show. If you want to get in for the overtime section, you call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. You press the one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Just, you know, going through the schedule, you know, upcoming schedule that's coming in the next couple of weeks. You also have, like, the World Boxing Super Series resuming on January 27th, you're going to be having the World Boxing Super Series semifinals. You have starting off there on the 27th as in the cruiserweight division, you're going to have Oleksandr Usyk against Maris Bradis for the WBO and WBC cruiserweight championships there. So that's going to be a big fight that's going to be there in the World Boxing Super Series. Not seeing anything, any television stations picking that up as of yet. And, you know, over the quarterfinals, you know, the World Boxing Super Series website had a couple of issues trying to have a webcast of these fights. So hopefully a television station picks that up there, because you're going to have, you know, that happening on January 27th, and then the next week in February 3rd, you're going to have Murat Gassiev versus Yuria Dodikos for the other two major cruiserweight championships there in the World Boxing Super Series semifinals. So, I mean, the winner of those two matches will be going up against each other for all the cruiserweight belts there. So, I mean, cruiserweight division, the World Boxing Super Series is going to be, you know, really big, you know, out there. And you also have, you know, over in the super middleweight division, things picking back up, as you have George Groves, you know, going up against Chris Eubank Jr. There. So that's going to be over in Manchester, England. That's going to be in February 17th. And then, you know, they recently announced Callum Smith against Jürgen Brammer will be on February 24th. They just recently, like, locked that down. So all of the matchups in the World Boxing Super Series semifinals have been finalized. So kind of like looking forward to these matchups, in particular the cruiserweight division there in the semifinals, as those are going to be very big matches there in the cruiserweight division. And once, you know, the World Boxing Super Series kind of like clears itself up through the finals, probably by, I would say, the summer months of this year, you know, we'll have, you know, undisputed cruiserweight champion, and we'll have, you know, one of the top guys in the super middleweight division kind of like be able to step out there, and they'll be they will be proving themselves, as far as like what they've been able to do in their respective divisions. Anybody have any comments about what's going to be happening in the World Boxing Super Series?
Well, me personally, I'm just looking forward to seeing Dodikos. I think he's going to shock the world and end up winning the entire thing. I know a lot of people believe Usyk is going to win, and rightfully so. He's been a beast, been a monster. But it's something about Dodikos that is just very, very, very attractive to me. He has KO power. He has that. He's basically a Cuban-style fighter, but he goes after it, and he gets people the fuck out of there. And that's what I'm looking forward to. You know, Gassiev is not going to be an easy fight, because Gassiev is also a beast in his own right. But I think Dodikos is going to be the man to beat in this tournament. And I'm looking forward to seeing him and Usyk match up in the finals.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've kind of been, you know, sided towards Usyk ever since this World Boxing Super Series had been put together. I think that, you know, I've kind of like bought into the stock of Usyk being the real deal in reference to the cruiserweight division. So I kind of like been siding with him as the favorite. But Yuria Dodikos, I think, is, you know, somebody that may be coming in there with almost like a nothing to lose type of attitude, and, you know, kind of like saying that, you know, hey, you know, not that many people may expect me to, you know, come out of this World Boxing Super Series tournament and winning it. And so, you know, his, you know, first fight here, where he's, you know, kind of like going up against Murat Gassiev, this might be his first opportunity to like kind of like prove to the boxing world that, you know, he's, you know, world class and the real deal. And so if he's able to, you know, get this win against Murat Gassiev and then move into the World Boxing Super Series finals, then he'll get a lot more eyes towards him, as far as like seeing the field come out as the undisputed cruiserweight champion.
Style-wise, these guys if you like offense, all four of these guys bring offense. I don't know if I think Usyk's still a favorite. I think he's still a favorite. I think people need to slow down on the hype of him saying that he can fight at heavyweight and all that. I think people need to slow down on that. I just think style-wise, these two fights are very – even in the super middleweight, Groves and Eubank, their styles are going to mesh well. So at least three of the four fights I could see being very exciting, very great fights because all of them have similar offensive mindsets, that's what I would say. The Smith and Bronham fight, not so much. And I think this tournament has lost some luster. I don't know necessarily why. I guess because, you know, they don't have a lot of U.S. fighters in it. And I think this is in their next tournament, because I'm pretty sure they're going to try to make another tournament and another division. Yep. I think they're going to try to get some more U.S. fighters because over here, the excitement for it is just not there. Individual fights bring excitement, but not the actual overall tournaments.
Yeah, you had the thing there with Callum Smith and Jürgen Brammer. I think that's, you know, expected for a lot of people that will come out to, like, a decision. And with the lack of U.S. involvement overall in these cruiserweight and super middleweight tournaments, that you don't get the overall buzz from U.S. fight fans. And they say that they're going to resume with the World Boxing Super Series and a couple of other divisions. But I'm not necessarily certain if some of these divisions will have a lot of or a good amount of fighters that are, you know, from the U.S. I think they were trying to focus on some of those lower weight classes like 118, 112 or something like that as far as like one of the tournaments they may start up again. So if they were going to, you know, try to do another one, for me, it would have to be something that is either at from, I would say, 135 to 154. It would have to include one of those weight classes that's between 135 and 154 in order to have somebody that is kind of, you know, from the U.S., I would say. If they were able to do something at 154, that would be good because it's very deep and you still have, like, a lot of American fighters there in the 154-pound division. You know, that'd be able to do something. But, you know, with the thing with 154 is, you know, everything is basically cut and dry at the top because, you know, you have, you know, Arislandi Lara, you have, you know, Charlo there, you have Jared Hurd there, you know, basically holding titles there in the 154-pound division along with Saddam Ali. They're getting that WBO 154-pound title. So not necessarily certain that 154 would be included in the World Boxing Super Series in the near future. But as far as, like, what's going on currently with the World Boxing Super Series, I mean, I'm kind of, like, looking forward to a lot of these matchups, you know, myself. It's just that if they had, you know, a lot of or better American coverage on it, then they would get a lot more buzz than they are right now. I think the whole thing with George Groves and Chris Eubank, it's going to be a very, very raucous atmosphere over in England for that particular fight. But I think that, you know, they needed more opportunities to, like, have that type of atmosphere, you know, not only in England, but, you know, in the United States as well, and probably in Germany or something like that. But I think they kind of, like, missed out by picking these particular divisions to start with this World Boxing Super Series. Just seeing here, 813, you got something to say about World Boxing Super Series here real quick? I just seeing if he was still on the line. I'm not sure if he still is. But we're pretty much like in an overtime section of the show. Just wanted to get through, you know, a little bit more on what's going down in the year 2018 coming up. You know, I was talking about the title fight between Mikey Garcia against Sergey Lipinets on February 10th, and also part of that card will be the rematch between Rancis Barthelemy and Curl Relic. You also have on February 17th, you have David Benavidez going up against Ronald the Thrill Gavril again. Devin Alexander will have another fight after having his return fight. After a very long layoff, he'll be taking on Victor Ortiz. And Danny Garcia will be going up against Brandon Rios on February 17th. And in the heavyweight division, things are coming up in the month of March, as on March 3rd, over at the Barclays Center, you're going to have the WBC Heavyweight Championship on the line as Deontay Wilder takes on Luis Ortiz. And on March 31st, over in the UK, you're going to have the unification match between Anthony Joshua and Joseph Parker that's going to be in Cardiff, Wales. So you have a lot of, you know, a lot of big-time fights coming up in the first 3 months of 2018. Kind of like following up to, you know, what happened in 2017, trying to keep up the momentum there. So just want to get like a overall synopsis of, you know, what's upcoming here in the first few months. Also, y'all could check out the boxing preview article that's on thechtonsports.com that was written by Terrell. So be sure to check out that article. But I want to start off with World Rank. What are you looking forward to in these first few months of 2018?
Shout out to Terrell for the article. I'll definitely check that out. In terms of what I'm looking forward to, man, I just want to see competitive fights. That's what I'm most concerned about. The best fight and the best. I'm not very, you know, happy about some of these meaningless fights. I understand people that take, you know, warm-ups and tune-ups, but now in age, when you're only fighting two times a year, we want to see the guys fight each other. In terms of the schedule, I mean, there's a lot of good B-level fights. There's not really any big fights early on, I don't think. A lot of these fights already got, you know, predetermined winners or whatever. But one thing I do want to say is about the Devin Alexander Ortiz fight. I'm a little disappointed because when you make retreads and you bring guys back, and we had a discussion about Will Devin Alexander, you know, where he was in the last 2 years or so. When you bring these guys back and you have them fight each other, and then what's going to happen is the winner of this fight is going to get, you know, a Danny Garcia or a Thurman or a Porter, and I don't think that's necessarily right. You know, it's a lot of, you know, prospects that should be getting the opportunity. You know, if you're going to bring these guys back, bring them back against a prospect. Don't bring them back. Don't have two retreads going after each other and then try to stick them in a main level fight. So things like that, you know, PBC. I mean, I not that I've been a critic or a fan of PBC, but right now in the stage of where they are, it just looks like they're telling guys, from Mikey Garcia to Adrian Broner, they're just telling guys, we'll get you belts. We don't necessarily trying to put you in the best fight. Our goal seems to be to protect you and get you as many belts without having to fight somebody as we can. So if we can get away with all that stuff and try to make meaningful fights, that's what I'm all about.
The thing with Devin Alexander and Victor Ortiz is kind of almost like a retread, like you said, particularly with Victor Ortiz, because, I mean, they had him with that rematch against Andre Berto last year, and, you know, not many people were, you know, as interested in that particular fight as they were with that first fight, because it just took so long for that rematch to happen. And so, you know, having Devin Alexander there against Victor Ortiz now is almost like, you know, something that should have happened 3 or 4 years ago. So, you know, I'm not, you know, necessarily intrigued as to what happens after the results of that particular fight, but good stuff since right there. All right, who's next on the line?
Yeah, I was just, even on the same note,
like I said, to Ortiz, have a center fight. That should have happened a few years ago when both of them had a lot more luster on their names and just the inactivity. And like I said, now it's almost like, what's it even useless for this fight? And better to win, especially considering what happened with Ortiz in his last fight. I guess that was Collazo, I believe, last year with the knockout. I forgot what round that is. So, I mean, Ortiz to me is 1 foot in the door and 1 foot out the door, you know, and probably more out the door. So I definitely expect him to take a loss in that fight. We know Alexander with his recent troubles with addiction to pills and stuff like that. So we saw him fight, I believe it was, what, last October, something like that, here in Florida. So, I mean, for him, it's a bit of interest to see what he can do now that he's so, quote-unquote, rededicated himself to the sport and his free of his addiction and things like that. So, but like I said, and even that fight, when in the Alexander fight, Keith Thurman was in attendance to that fight. So you already know they're probably looking to possibly line him up on that level for the Keith Thurman fight. Maybe like Brown June or something like that, because at this point we know Keith Thurman does not have an opponent yet or a date, but nevertheless, he says he's ready to come back, though. So we probably expect to see him around March or April, something like that. But just once we get back to the schedule for the year, I think we'll be just a step closer to seeing some clarity at 147, a step closer to seeing clarity at 154, 168, and certainly the heavyweight division. We'll just a step closer to some possible unifications early next year. But we just have a lot of fights to play out for this year to see who's going to be the exact names at what ranking, within what organization, and things like that. So basically we're waiting for the stars to align. So we'll definitely be a step closer. I would say really around June, July this year, we'll know a lot more what to look forward to, you know.
Yep. No doubt. All right, 646, what you got?
Come on, man. You know what I'm looking forward to. Monster. Barclay Center. Deontay.
Oh, wait. So you ain't looking forward to going to Madison Square Garden on March 3rd?
Nah. Who's fighting? What's that Russian guy name again? I don't even know, man. I'm looking for the Bronze Bomber to take the first step. This is what I told you before your end of the year show. I told you he was going to fight Ortiz at the top of the year. You said, nah, that's not going to happen. I believe it when they step into the ring. I'm surprised you even read the fight on the schedule, because I'm surprised you didn't say allegedly they're going to fight March 3rd. It's going to happen. Deontay Wilder, Luis Ortiz. Look for Wilder to knock Ortiz out within the first three rounds of the fight. He's going to demolish him. He's going to massacre him. He's going to show the world that he is the best heavyweight in the world. One step closer to fighting Anthony Joshua. It's the fight we all want to see. This is the kickoff. This is the de facto tournament. You got Joshua fighting Joseph Parker. He's going to starch him. You got Deontay Wilder fighting Ortiz. He's going to starch him. And then I say August of this year, you're going to see Deontay Wilder versus Anthony Joshua. Now, as for 147, you know, I'm not too sure why our world rank is saying that Thurman doesn't have an opponent. Thurman's going to be fighting Jesse Vargas. So, you know, that's going to be an interesting fight. Because, you know, Thurman, from what I was told, his elbow was really, really bad. So to take a fighter the caliber of Jesse Vargas, yeah, he's no Floyd Mayweather, but Jesse Vargas is not a soft touch. So I think that's going to be a very interesting fight. Might be a lot closer than people expect if Keith Thurman's elbow is not 100%. As for the rest of the fights coming up, I'm actually looking forward to the HBO card, the 27th. It's going to be Lucas Matisse and Jorge Linares on separate fights. I'm looking forward to the Matisse fight because, you know, Matisse is probably the best active boxer never to win a world championship. So I'm looking to see if he could finally capture a world championship. But that's basically it. It's all about March 3rd. It's all about the heavyweight. Heavyweight boxing is back, and that's what we're all looking forward to.
Hold on, you were talking about Matisse? Yeah, because, yeah, the thing is like, yeah, he couldn't, he did, like, you know, beat Peterson, but that was for, like, an interim belt, and he just couldn't, you know, get the job done against Danny Garcia, which, you know, we, like, mentioned earlier, that was something where, you know, a lot of people expected Matisse to, you know, be able to beat Garcia, but he wasn't able to do it. So if he's able to get this vacant WBA regular belt against Tiwa Kiram, then, you know, he'll be a world champion for the first time there. But, I'm not necessarily surprised that, you know, you will be looking forward to what's happening over at the Barclays Center on March 3rd. They have a pre-sale tickets out right now. Over on Ticketmaster, with the if you put in like heavyweight in all caps or boxing in all caps, you could, you know, get a jump on tickets for that particular fight card on March 3rd over at the Barclays Center there. Of course, you know, with me, I kind of like have to, you know, wait until, you know, the actual date of the fight to actually see if, you know, Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz will fight. Because, of course, you know, I gotta put on my conspiracy hat real quick. And I actually got to put something out there in reference to the conspiracy section of the show. So, so, rumors floating around says that Dominic Brazil should be close to his phone, as he may be the potential replacement for Luis Ortiz in this fight card on March 3rd. So, if Luis Ortiz can't make it, then you'll see Deontay Wilder against Dominic Brazil on March 3rd in the Barclays Center. And there you go. That's your conspiracy section of the Boxing Swords Radio Show right there. Yeah, I mean, either way, I'm kind of, you know, looking forward to, you know, Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz, you know, actually happening on March 3rd. I don't want any thing to, like, kind of delay it or, you know, have a replacement, because, you know, I like to see if, you know, Deontay Wilder would be able to, you know, go up against somebody like Luis Ortiz. To see what he does against a heavyweight that, you know, has some type of boxing skill. I think, you know, the youth of Deontay Wilder should be a key factor in this potential matchup between these two. And then if he's able to get through that, then he'll be basically cleared to face the winner of Anthony Joshua and Joseph Parker, which I feel that the overall unification fight will happen by August of this year. I don't think that there should be any other fights that are lined up for either fighter that would kind of delay a potential Anthony Joshua Deontay Wilder fight from taking place. So I'm kind of like looking forward to what will happen there on March 3rd, and, you know, kind of like putting those two other light heavyweight title fights in the back burner over in Madison Square Garden. So I don't think a lot of people will be, you know, really concerned about what happens with those two fights. In particular, the fight with Sergey Kovalev, because, I mean, they basically gifted him two light heavyweight belts there, and now he's going up against Igor Mikhalkin for that WBO belt and the other minor light heavyweight title, and then you have Dmitry Bivol against Sullivan Barrera, which will be probably a little bit of a better fight, but I think that Bivol will be able to, you know, get the win there against Sullivan Barrera, and then potentially have a unification fight between Bivol and Sergey Kovalev later on in 2018. So I think that that should shape up to make the light heavyweight division a little bit more clear as well, alongside the cruiserweight division, super middleweight, and the heavyweight division. So I think we're going to have a lot of unification fights in the year 2018 that kind of, you know, follow up with the big year of 2017, which I think is going to be good overall for the sport. You know, on that note, just wanted to, you know, see if anybody here had any closing remarks before I put it into this episode.
I do. I just have a question about the Wilder fight. I give 646 credit because I didn't think the fight was going to happen. And I said that I didn't think so, too. So I'm going to give him credit because he did say the fight was going to happen this year with him and Ortiz. But before the fight was made, I had the assumption that Wilder, I don't know if it's not taking a challenge is the right word. But now that the fight's being made, I have a different take. Like, people are not going to give him credit for this fight if he wins, because now they're going to say that Ortiz is old. And I want to get your opinion on that.
Well, I mean, 646 basically, you know, kind of like stated that even, you know, before the initial fight was going to be scheduled on November 4th of 2017. So I think that's going to be the similar approach here in this particular fight here on March 3rd. My thing overall with Ortiz is that I want to see how he really comes out in these first few rounds, because if you really look over the course of you know, Ortiz's career recently, he hasn't really had that many fights out there. I mean, we saw him. I mean, the last time I really saw him was, you know, against Tony Thompson in the DC Armory, and in that particular fight, that wasn't really much of a fight in my book, because Tony Thompson was out there to basically get a check, so to speak. That was pretty much Tony Thompson's, you know, last professional fight, I would say. And so that was basically a wash. Then you had the Malik Scott fight. You know, the Malik Scott fight happened because Ortiz was going through a whole lot with his previous promotional banner, Golden Boy, because after that Tony Thompson fight, he was supposed to, you know, have another fight lined up to kind of like clarify the whole thing with the WBA, and that didn't end up happening. So he ended up signing with Eddie Hearn, and so he had those two fights, that David Allen fight and that Daniel March fight, and, you know, after all that, things like kind of like fell apart. He had like a shoulder injury of sorts, so he didn't end up fighting on, he had the David Allen fight, and then after the David Allen fight, he was supposed to fight in, I think it was like April of 2017, but that didn't end up happening. And so you had this whole ordeal with Wilder and Ortiz for November, and that didn't happen, and then he ended up coming back to fight Daniel March. So it's going to be a concern to see how he's going to be able to perform here against Deontay Wilder on March 3rd. So that's what I'm looking for in this potential fight between those two there. Is there anything else?
Well, I think we know where I'm going with this. We all know Deontay Wilder is not going to get credit unless he beats Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali, and George Foreman all in the same night. He's never going to get the credit that he deserves because he's not the classic boxer. He's not the quote unquote skilled fighter. He's athleticism, aggression, intensity, and he's knocked you out. We don't need to go 12. The thing with Ortiz is that you're already starting to hear the whispers, oh, Ortiz is old, Ortiz is fat, Ortiz is this, Ortiz is that. Let's not forget HBO and Golden Boy built Luis Ortiz up to be the boogeyman of the heavyweight division. Now all of a sudden that he doesn't have that HBO machine behind him, he doesn't have the Golden Boy machine behind him, all of a sudden he's a bum. That's what the people are going to say. Deontay Wilder will never get the credit he deserves. Once he beats Ortiz, they're going to say he's too old. When he beats Joshua, they're going to say, well, Joshua wasn't ready. Joshua's not that skilled. It doesn't matter what Deontay Wilder does. He will never get credit from the boxing masses. It's just the way it is. It's just the way it's going to be. So all he can really do is keep knocking people out.
Well, I don't know about this whole thing with Ortiz, but I will say this right now. Deontay Wilder's not beating Anthony Joshua, and I'm sticking to that. Hey, Terrell, you got anything to say on this?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to avoid having Deontay Wilder take over the show yet again. This is a new year, so we got new topics. But it's probably going to evolve into that. Definitely looking forward to Ortiz Wilder, and I hope that it does happen. And yes, yeah, you said it would happen. And 646 now is definitely calling out on that. But aside from that, I need for Wilder to fight Ortiz because we simply do not have enough to go on from his previous bodies of work from his opponents. I certainly even his last fight against DeBurn. The only thing I like from that fight, I take from that fight, aggression, that anger, that rage that, that I know is definitely within Deontay Wilder. And but at the same time, I can't give him a whole lot of credit for that. I mean, yeah, he knocked the guy out, whatever, but Severn came in there flat, not ready, and no injuries, no excuses, right? But it's like he didn't do anything. He just got his ass knocked out. That's it. So, but I really need for Wilder to fight Ortiz so we can give him a good gauge and see where it's at. And looking at Parker and Joshua to see how Joshua looks post that fight and to consider who comes out on top on that one. So really, these two fights for these guys, Parker, Joshua, Wilder, Ortiz, is really going to set the stage for how we're going to project a potential Wilder-Joshua fight. You know, because like I said, with Wilder, once again, I just don't have enough data to say, oh yeah, he's going to definitely beat Joshua. I can't say that because we've seen Joshua in there with Takam, Klitschko, people like that, people of that ilk, and we know how he performs. And yes, he's only 18, 19, but he's definitely getting better, and we know he's definitely the better boxer, things like that. Probably Joshua's biggest concern is his win, you know, things like that. I'm not sure if that's due to his weight, but, I mean, the guy's 6'5", 6'6", 250, 260, whatever it is. So, I mean, we've never seen a big heavyweight like that could just run around the ring. We don't see that. But, once again, with Wilder, I don't have enough data to say, yo, yeah, he's definitely going to beat Joshua. I can't say that. So that's all we desperately need for Wilder to fight Ortiz, to give some more data to go by, you know?
Yeah, I feel on that one. In reference to the thing with Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz, I think this is, you know, something where he could have a career-defining fight against Luis Ortiz, in that I would like to see if Wilder is at the top of his game and Ortiz is at the top of his game. If Wilder performs the way that he did in his first fight with Bermond Stavern, if he's going to be able to come out with the victory then, because I think in that particular fight was where, you know, he kind of showed signs of composure in the ring, showed signs of, you know, him being able to, you know,
be in the ring for, you know, a long period of time there and you know, stay in the pocket or, you know, stay with his game plan from, like, rounds 1 to round 12 against somebody like Severn, who at the time was, you know, a, you know, world heavyweight champion. I don't necessarily, you know, want to use, like, another example, you know, like Wilder's fight against Johan Duopas, where, you know, Duopas kind of, like, got to Wilder a little bit, but Wilder was still, you know, basically had the upper hand in that particular fight against Duopas. So it wasn't like he was, like, in real trouble in that particular fight. But I think, you know, up to this point, Wilder's most impressive performance to me was that first fight that he had with Bermon Severn. So if he's able to have that similar type of performance against Luis Ortiz, and that could probably, you know, have more people leaning towards him in a potential matchup between him and Anthony Joshua, and with Anthony Joshua going up against Joseph Parker. I just think that Joshua is like a heavy, I would say he's a heavy favorite against Joseph Parker. And, you know, there's been talk that he's going to be cutting weight down for his upcoming fight against Joseph Parker. So I think he's going to be falling below 250 pounds there. He's going to be probably around 240, 245 against in this fight with Joseph Parker. So he's going to be, you know, probably a little bit leaner going against Parker in on March 31st. So I'm kind of like looking forward to that to see if that actually comes to fruition there. But, you know, on that note, that, you know, brings a close to this episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. The next episode will be next Sunday after the fight card over at the Barclays Center. That's headlined by Errol Spence Jr. and Lamont Peterson. Should be in the house there on Saturday for that particular fight. So if y'all are coming out there, we'll be able to, you know, link up there before the fight happens if you're coming out to that particular fight card. But like I say at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stay in the trade. On that note, I'm out. Thanks for calling.